So, sort of what I'm talking today is sort of framed around my interest in the dispute about whaling in the Southern Ocean and sort of other disputes about the treatment of animals by cultural others. So that's sort of what I'll get to, but I sort of just want to, so grounded in some stuff I've looked at the literature in relation to the concept of cold blood and some broader ideas about the representations of animals and humans in relation to animals. So I'll sort of try and pull out some themes through that. I just want you to look at this image here. Mostly make out. So this is looks like a Japanese woman sitting on the Japanese flag with the blood dripping. So I'll come back to that as a constant image, but sort of this notion of Japan's shame and these sort of bad things. There's constant themes in here I hope you'll pick up as I sort of go through what I'm going to talk about today. So the underlying theme of sort of my interest in the whaling dispute is this sort of relational construction. In simple terms, Japan bad, Australia good. Australia is standing up for what's right. But there's a clear cultural element in the construction of the cultural other. So the way we perceive Japan is both reactive and prescriptive, but it's more about how we perceive ourselves. So it brings in some sort of sociological theory on subcultures within that. But sort of the underlying theme, or the central theme across whaling, which I want to talk about, is this notion of derogatory animality. And I'll sort of bring in some examples of that and how this sort of comes into a bit of an ironic sense towards the end when I unpack the dispute over whaling a little bit more. But sort of in the sense that it's normative and less than intentional at the same time, and how that sort of manifests itself. So as I mentioned, my focus is on the whaling dispute in the Southern Ocean, but a lot of these sort of ideas do play out in other disputes as well. And if I don't know if we'll have time, but maybe some questions will tease some of those out. But I think there's a bit of a messiness in here. And I'll try and tease some of these out, like a messiness between cold and cold-blooded in the relational construction of Japanese whaling. And I'll try and sort of tease that out a little bit as we get through. But I think this is something I'm still trying to get my head around, but so Laurie Gruen's got this book about entangled empathy, but I think there's an entanglement here, but I'm not sure if it parallels, so I might be doing a bit of disservice to Laurie's ideas, but I think there's some sort of entanglement going on within this as well. Just not quite sure how much it sort of reflects some of her ideas. But I'll start with another image here, because it's sort of want to talk about, or re-emphasise this notion of the cultural other. So this is an image from 2010. I got it from DeviantArt, which is sort of an online artist community. And the artist said this is sort of, he's implying there's deceit on the part of the government in Japan. And this is his response to the release of the documentary The Cove, which is mostly about dolphins, but there's a hint of whales. And he says it's the torture of animals gone too far. So you can see this sort of depiction of Japan and the government sort of covering it up. There's a common theme of deceit, which I'll come back to here. But I mostly chose this because this is a portrayal of Japan as bad. But in the comments was this. So it's the cultural other. There's no reference to what we do in slaughterhouses, like we, I'm talking about the West, mainstream Western cultures. But this notion of the cultural other doing these bad things. And this is a persistent thing, and I think it's not always obvious. Sometimes it's a more form of casual racism, underlies things it's not always said, but it's always there. So we can see this is an overtly racist statement. But you can also unpack this. You can see what they did. You don't even have to unpack what they did. We just know what they did is bad. So it sort of makes this implication, but that implication is clear as well. So I want to jump a little bit. This is where I'm going to pull some stuff out of the literature. And this is a quote from Dara Lovitz. So some of you may or may not know who Dara is. She wrote, this was, after she wrote this, she wrote a book called Muzzling the Movement about this, the criminalization of dissent, so the passing of the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act in the US. But this was from a paper, and it sort of just emphasized the title of the paper here. So activists have become the new cold-blooded terrorists. So this reference to cold-blooded. There's no mention of it throughout the paper at all, it's just in the title, but there's sort of this inference here that we've become the bad ones. So it's sort of something that's just happened. So we're the peaceful people, now we've become the calculated, cold-blooded sort of terrorists. So it's not killers, but terrorists. And this is sort of a subsequent quote. This is quite a transformation. So I want to bring this in and sort of to show a little bit of a contradiction in this sort of normative way that animals are portrayed, or animals are used to be portrayed in certain ways to reflect on the human. So a theme in this paper is sort of very critical of the Animal Enterprise Terrorism Act, and there's a lot of critiques out there that this is a corporate-driven thing where corporations are trying to protect their own interests. And a specific quote from this paper, so this 2007 paper, is there's an akin to it, the companies have got their snout in the trough. So we can see the animality in there, sort of this negative association of pigs. And this is a common thing. So, for example, in Canada, I was fortunate enough to see Lauren Corman, who's a professor at Brock University in Critical Animal Studies, give a paper in 2007. She's talking about a campaign in Toronto to try and get people to consume less energy. Everyone was electricity pigs. So again, this negative association of animals. So this is quite pervasive. I'm sure we've all seen this before. But this is an ongoing and was a long-running campaign in Toronto by the government as well. I want to introduce another one, and this is something I came across last week. This is from a newspaper article in my local paper called the Aurora Mercury, so just last week. So this notion of the black dog. So they're talking about depression here, so again this negative association. So Edwina was raising money for a non-profit organisation in Australia. She was going to ride as part of a team from Adelaide to Darwin. And if you know Australia, that's quite a distance, and it's right through the middle of Australia, so very hot. Very, very hot this time of year. But there's also a Black Dog Institute in the UK as well. So this is not just an Australian thing, but this notion of the black dog as sort of a negative. So here's an image. This is from the UK campaign. The campaign is run by a group called SANE. I can't remember what the acronym stands for. But you can see there's literally a black dog on his back. The dog is on his back. He can't get it off. So the quotes, he liked to wake me up with very repetitive negative thinking. So there's a negative association here. So I'm just trying to re-emphasize here this sort of negative association with other animals. I'm just going to chuck in another quote here. This is from the Journal of Critical Animal Studies last year. And I think it's just the word choice is a little bit clumsy, so I don't want to sort of read too much into this. And I don't really want to get into the overall argument, but just this notion of the cold-blooded deploying of murderous violence. So humans being cold-blooded, so again, this sort of negative association. So sort of reinforcing to some extent this divide between humans and other animals and sort of this hierarchy. So cold-blooded is sort of below human, which is sort of this, if we're trying to speak up for animals or trying to sort of say we should be treating animals in a certain way, but we're still using these negative stereotypes, portraying humans as like animals in that negative sense. So this is where I sort of bring in some of this messiness. So we might see this as ironic, especially given the journal was published in and what the overall aims of the author is, which I don't really want to get into. But we can see, again, this sort of connection to criminality as cold-blooded as well, but a little bit differently to what Lovitz was talking about. So the messiness I'm talking about is, and I'll come to this with Japan and the whaling as well, is sort of this link to being cold, but also being cold-blooded, where cold-blooded is more strategic, it's more deceptive, that sort of thing, which I'll come back to. But just to show how pervasive the notion of cold-blooded is, in Australia last week, someone working for the police service was shot. The Prime Minister came out and said this is a cold-blooded killing. So we all know these terms around, but they just keep resurfacing. But I think we often use the term cold-blooded when we don't really understand why someone's done something. And I think if we unpack that a little bit further, there's some layers in there, so they're not understanding that it's something we can't control. And I think there's a little bit of that in the dispute about Japanese whaling, and I'll try and tease some of that out now. So I'll just give a quick, very, very quick overview. So Australia has a bifurcated history with whaling. We went very quickly from being a pro-whaling nation to an anti-whaling nation. And we pride ourselves on that we were sort of one of the first. So whaling was banned in 1979. That was only protest for about 3 years. in Australia against whaling, but there's also, we can't just say it was protesting stop whaling. Whale numbers were dropping dramatically. It was commercially failing as an industry as well. And that's probably a larger reason about why whaling was banned, and it was just politically expedient. It was a Conservative Prime Minister that banned it as well, so that's sort of interesting in itself. So there was a moratorium passed in 1986 in the International Whaling Commission, which is supposed to be a 10-year ban on commercial whaling. It's still there, even though it was supposed to end at 10 years. It's never been revoked. There's been a number of attempts to do so, but it's never been revoked. Japan left the International Whaling Commission in 1985, when they knew the moratorium was coming, but they rejoined in 1987, and I'll come back to that date. So that's when their scientific whaling program started. In 1987, it was called JARPA-1. And this is in accordance with the International Whaling Convention from 1946. JARPA-2 is the one that's sort of around the contemporary dispute, the one that got to the International Court of Justice recently. So some more context, the Southern Ocean Whale Sanctuary, which was created by the International Whaling Commission, was established in 1994, and Australia created its own sanctuary in 1999. And that's sort of the the economic exclusion zone around Australia, so that 200-mile border, but also encapsulates the Australian Antarctic Territory, which is a little bit contested. So some of the ocean that Australia claims as part of our country, essentially. And the UK recognises it, but a lot of countries don't. So JARPA-2 commenced in 2005, and that's it stands for the Japanese Whale Research Program under special permits. And where these are sort of controversial is that countries grant themselves permits for scientific whaling. And that's where the sort of hint at deceit comes from. So Japan, in 2005, they tried to overturn the moratorium. That was one of the times, but it requires a 75% majority. So that's sort of where they normally don't get to it. So they got 33 votes to 32 in favour of overturning. So they got a simple majority, but just couldn't get the 75% majority. In 2008, the Humane Society launched legal action against whaling in the Southern Ocean, particularly in the Australian Whale Sanctuary, in the Australian Federal Court, and they won the case, but of course Japan doesn't recognise the authority. So what I want to do now, I've got two clips for you, which I've taken from the TV series Whale Wars, which some of you may or may not be familiar with, but it airs on Animal Planet, and it started in 2008, and it basically, they send camera people down the Sea Shepherd boats into the Antarctic, report what goes on, and create sensational sort of narratives about it. So I want you to sort of think about the language that sort of comes out in this, and I'll sort of try and unpack some of it once we get past it.
Shamaru is the most evil ship on the face of the planet right now. So we call it the cetacean Death Star because it's a symbol of death to the whales.
We have to do whatever it takes to tell us our environment. There's no one else doing it, but they are doing it to bear it. It's a slaughter that shouldn't be going on anymore.
So there's quite a, so I've selectively edited this and put this together, and you've got to bear in mind that the program's very sensational as well. But so one of the underlying themes there was Japan is evil. So this is where this relational construction comes from. And my argument outside of this is that it's not really about Japan or about Wales. It's really about Australia and a construction of national identity, but that's sort of aside to this. But the other one is they're not like us. And in the next clip, I'll sort of unpack, show you some examples that unpacks that a little bit more. This notion of difference, it's primitive, it's barbaric, and you can see hints of that in there. And there's, whilst not directly sort of constructing animality, there's sort of hints at it in there as well. And I think it'll come out a little bit more in the next clip. And of course, there's lots more in there that we can unpack, but it's maybe something discussion later if anyone wants to. So I'm just going to chuck a quote up here, which sort of sets the scene in Australia, or sort of the attitude towards whaling. And opposition to whaling is widespread. It's a vast majority of Australians are opposed to it. But I use this quote because Bob Brown, if you don't know who that was, he was, until recently, the leader of the Australian Greens and a member of Parliament for a very long time, considered the most respected member of Parliament in Australia. Just his manner, the way he spoke, the way he approached things. So just look at the language here. Gruesome, bloody, medieval. These are constant themes throughout. But if we take on this last part, no place in this modern world. It's sort of backwards in the past, animal-like. This underlying theme is consistent throughout it all. He was also the Australian chairperson for Sea Shepherd up until April 2014 as well, so there was a direct linkage there. So I think this sort of teases out a little bit of the messiness, you know, this backwards and primitive and cold. There's sort of something... It's sort of messy in the sense of this notion of uncivilized, but then when you get into this idea of cold-blooded, this calculated killing, and that's sort of where this notion of deceptiveness comes in. You can't be deceptive unless you're intelligent, and I think that sort of ties back to the wolf earlier. But at the same time, they're backwards and not knowing, so this is where I think there's a messiness there. That, like, I just normally tease this out a little bit more, but it sort of contrasts with the vindictiveness that's sort of implied in how they're deceiving us and going and killing whales under the guise of research. So I'll just play this second clip. It goes for minutes, and then we'll sort of unpack a couple of these ideas. So this one's quite a bit more positive, but you can see there's a hint of this civilising mission. Even though Australian members of Parliament, the Attorney General come out and specifically said, this is not a civilising mission. You can see there's this undertone of civilising mission. This is something that belongs in the past. Our progress as a species further away from the animal, so there's a bit of irony in there as well. But our progress as a species is tied to the end of whaling. And it's tied to teaching Japan how to progress away from these barbaric practices. So I want to end with an image, so you can see this theme comes up again of the rising sun with the blood dripping off it. But I don't know if you can make it out. So this is scientific research, and here you can see the date 1988, so this inference of when JARPA 2 started, that this is when the deceit began, and so the whale's been killing under this deceitful notion. But this is essentially Pinocchio, but his nose is a harpoon. Mm-hmm. So as I said, so this imagery is comments, the notion of deceit. So this sort of cold-blooded practice, and that it's calculated, it's planned, so it's deceitful, so it's intelligent. This is where the sort of the messiness comes in, because it's also backwards at the same time. But it's situated in this broader, across the side of this derogatory animality, and that's why I sort of introduced those references earlier. But I don't think it's just limited to whaling. I think this is sort of across how we sort of portray disputes about other species and other cultures as well. But I just wanted to sort of... Whaling's sort of the big, shiny one at the moment, because Australia won in the courts, Japan's still contesting it, and it might... they're trying to restart their scientific-based whaling. So I think this is something that's sort of going to come about, and it'll be interesting, at least for me, how it sort of gets framed if Japan starts whaling again. And I'll leave it there. Thank you.